This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. President Bush's popularity has not dampened the desires of Democrats to take him on. This week, Senator Bob Kerrey announced that he will formally declare his candidacy at the end of the month. Kerrey will join Paul Tsongas, Governor Douglas Wilder, and Iowa Senator Tom Harkin, the other announced candidates. Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton is also expected to throw his hat in the ring sometime soon. Most of us will get to know the candidates from the sound bites on the nightly TV news. A new study proposes changing the quality of TV campaign coverage. Its author is my guest, political consultant John Ellis. For many years, he was a political analyst at NBC News. While a fellow at the Joan Shorstein Barone Center on the Press, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard, he designed a study called Nine Sundays. It's a plan for a series of debates and conversations with the candidates to be broadcast for nine Sunday evenings between Labor Day and Election Day. Ellis said in preparation for his proposal, he studied how campaigns have been covered in the media since 1960.
In 1968, just to give you some idea, there were three candidates running, Nixon, Humphrey, and Wallace. Generally speaking, a piece on the CBS Evening News or the NBC Nightly News or the ABC News was would start with the correspondent saying President Nixon went to Chicago today, and then you would hear a bite of President Nixon or then whatever, Richard Nixon, talking. And he would talk for 30 seconds. Then you'd come back to the correspondent, and the correspondent would do a bridge, and then Nixon would speak again. The average length of the soundbite, quote-unquote, in 1968 was somewhere between 42 and 45 seconds of hearing these people speak. And over the course of 70 days, you really got a sense of what these people were talking about and what they were like and how they dealt with different issues and so on and so forth. That, it wasn't by any means thorough, but it gave you a look at it. Now, flash forward to 1988. I was working at NBC News at the time, and in September on the NBC Nightly News, from September 1 to September 30, this total time of all of the sound bites for George Bush and Michael Dukakis was 1 minute and 37 seconds for George Bush and about 2.5 minutes for Michael Dukakis for the entire month of September on the NBC Nightly News. You can't talk about the issues facing the country in that short a time frame. You can't.
The centerpiece of your proposal is a series of TV programs to be broadcast on nine Sunday evenings between Labor Day and just before the elections. What would viewers see if they tuned in?
We propose that there be, we suppose, I should say, because we don't really have any control over it, but we suppose that like 1984 and 1988, there will be two presidential debates, one vice presidential debate. We propose that on the last Sunday before Election Day, the candidates be given 20 to 25 minutes each to speak back-to-back and make a sort of summary case for their candidacies. On the five remaining Sunday evenings, we propose that the candidates be part of something called, what we called, Conversations with the Candidates, which would feature a television anchorman, two reporters knowledgeable in that evening's subject area, and the candidate, say President Bush, from 7 o'clock to 7:45, followed by Bill Clinton, let's say, from 7:46 to 8:30.
Getting to this whole issue of debates, how are you going to get two candidates to engage each other in a political debate? Because I think it's very clear the way that the debates have been set up in the most recent election is that these are not debates.
Right.
No one is debating each other there.
They're sort of like press panels or whatever. Well, we came up with we went back and looked at all of the coverage going back to 1960, and we thought that the best format for presidential debates was the Nixon-Kennedy format of 1960, which is basically the two candidates in a television studio with one moderator to keep time and keep things moving along. No audience, live, put it up at 9 o'clock on Sunday night and let them go until 10:30.
What kind of an audience do debates normally get?
Huge. The last debate of the Bush-Dukakis race was seen by about 78 million people.
You have made this proposal voluntary. I'm wondering what incumbent, and if we're talking about President George Bush, this is a person who's way ahead in the polls, why would he agree to a series of programs that could shed some critical light on some of his programs and policies? It seems like it's a program that certainly favors the underdog.
I suspect that on first glance it probably does, but I think that the situation is roughly this. President Bush will probably have to do two debates anyway. President Reagan did two debates in 1984. Candidate Bush did two debates in 1988. You know, he's probably, that's sort of agreed that you should have at least two debates in a presidential campaign. So he's going to have to do that anyway. Vice President Quayle is going to have to do his one debate. The closing speeches, I think that works to their advantage. They give a speech on national television. What's left, then, are five conversations with the candidate, sort of mini press conferences, which happens to be the format which Mr. Bush is most comfortable, with which he is most comfortable and where he has, over the course of these last 3 years, been enormously effective.
What has the response of the networks been to these ideas?
The network response has been chilly from CBS, because the nine Sundays, five of the nine Sundays, run up against the 60 Minutes broadcast, which is their most profitable, and that's their sort of showcase piece, so that they're uncomfortable in doing anything that changes the chemistry on Sunday night. From NBC, we have received positive, positive feedback from Michael Gartner, who's the president of the news division, and we've also received some encouraging words from Capital Cities ABC. PBS, CNN, C-SPAN, Monitor have been generally positive and supportive.
Do you have fantasies of trying to make this the law to make sure that it happens?
No, I think that was a debate that we had at the Joan Shorenstein Barone Center, and we decided that we didn't want it to be part of any legislation. We wanted it to be strictly voluntary. Hope that the networks do it in 1992. If it works in 1992, maybe it'll be a model for 1996 and beyond.
And are you hopeful?
Yeah, well, I thought 2 months ago, I thought that this had about a 1 in 20 chance of flying. We released it right after Labor Day. The New York Times editorial pages have been enormously supportive. We receive great support from the Chicago Tribune, the Philadelphia Inquirer, Boston Globe, and other papers. We received a lot of support from certain Democratic presidential candidates. I'm much more hopeful now. I think if I had to judge the chances of it working out, I'd say 1 in 4.
What do you see as the defining issues in this 92 campaign? What will the candidates be talking about?
I think the issues are pretty much always the same. I think there are three basic issues: the national security, military preparedness and diplomacy, foreign policy, the use of force internationally. That's one group, national security. The next is the national economy, which is a bit of a misnomer because we are increasingly dealing in an international economy. But nevertheless, how the economy performs is always a major issue in campaigns. And finally, the national culture, and by that I mean what kind of country do we want to live in? What about K-12 education, so on and so forth? I think those are always the three issues. I think the Republicans have an advantage right now in all three, which makes it much more difficult for the Democrats to win.
Can these candidates, whoever they are in the Democratic Party, criticize a president like George Bush, who is so popular, criticize him without losing votes or paying a kind of political price for their words?
Well, there's a President Bush politically is sort of a twin tower. He's like the World Trade Center in New York. There is his personal popularity, which is enormous and which is, I think, unbreakable. And there is his political popularity, which is much more dependent upon economic factors, international factors, and matters of culture, broadly defined. The Democrats would be insane to attack him on the personal level, but the attacks which are leveled against matters of policy and politics are, I think, dealt with by the public as fair and square.
I'm speaking with John Ellis. He's a consultant to the Institute of Politics at Harvard University. He's also a regular contributor to the Los Angeles Times, and he's the author of a study and a proposal, actually, called Nine Sundays, a proposal for better presidential campaign coverage. Well, one candidate that doesn't seem to shy away from personal attacks against George Bush is Harkin. And when he talks about George Bush, he says he calls him George Herbert Walker Bush. Of course, I think the message to his audience is that this is a man with upper class roots that doesn't understand the needs of working class people. Is this message going to work? Is Harkin going to be able to kind of revive a kind of populist presidential campaign?
Well, I think that it depends on the audience. I think that the little long-winded answer here, the party out of power facing a fairly hopeless task will quite often return to its where it's most comfortable ideologically. In 1964, the Republicans facing Lyndon Johnson, you know, no hope there, they went with Barry Goldwater. In 1972, facing a very strong Richard Nixon, Democrats, no hope there, they went with George McGovern. 1984, facing a very strong Ronald Reagan, no hope there, they went where they were most comfortable, Walter Mondale. 1992, you know, very tough uphill, probably no hope there. It may be that that Tom Harkin's populist message will attract a real following.
Well, what Harkin seems to be doing is something that Michael Dukakis did not do, which is to fight anyway. I mean, to fight with words. And I think Dukakis was criticized by many people by sort of rolling over when President Bush and his campaign brought out a kind of nasty side to the whole election process.
Well, the other thing is that what Harkin and Dukakis have in common is that they don't have the experience of having run nationally. In 1980, George Bush was absolutely savaged by the forces aligned with Ronald Reagan in New Hampshire and in the South, and, you know, his wife was an abortionist and so on and so forth. He was used to, he learned from that experience what it was like to be under brutal attack. Dukakis and now Harkin were unfamiliar with what that feels like, what it's like to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and hear on national public radio that you're some kind of criminal coddler and abortionist or whatever it might be. That's tough. takes a lot out of you, and you have to have some experience in dealing with it. Makes it difficult for Harkin. Now right now. He's pretty glib, and he's got some nice lines, and he flashes these suitcases showing President Bush's foreign travel. Mm-hmm. But when you're in it, and it's 60-day fire drill, and you're fighting, you know, all sorts of different pressures, it helps to have been through the experience before.
Can anyone say that George Bush will win next year? I mean, can anyone guarantee that at this point in the game?
No, you can never guarantee. You can never guarantee that. On the other hand, if you're in Las Vegas, I would urge you to not bet against Mr. Bush.
So you're not going to put your money on Harkin or any of these other guys?
No, I think we'll be betting on the primaries, but the general election will lay off that one.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, John Ellis, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
John Ellis is the author of a proposal designed to improve the quality of presidential campaigns. It's called Nine Sundays, referring to nine Sunday evenings of presidential debates and conversations, which would take place between Labor Day and Election Day. Ellis consults to the Institute of Politics at Harvard and is a regular contributor to the Los Angeles Times. This is Fresh Air.